Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. My mom was in pain. She was in labor with her first baby. This is 1962 here in California. The hospital staff puts her, a woman in deep, painful, frightening labor, into a dark room, and they leave her there, alone for hours, all alone. Later, they come in and they give her drugs without explaining what they're doing to put her to sleep without ever asking for her consent. She isn't even conscious for the baby's birth, which ultimately isn't good for that baby either, my older brother. Flash forward. I'm pregnant in 1999. My husband and I discuss the birth plan. We attend classes to get ready for labor. I do pregnancy yoga like I'm preparing for a triathlon, something to conquer, to plan for, something we can handle together. I've decided it will be a natural birth, no drugs for me. And then the actual day comes, and it is nothing like I've imagined or planned for. It seems like every device in the hospital is attached to me, and I am being pumped full of drugs. I am throwing up purple Kool-Aid and begging for an epidural. Half a day later, thanks to a cesarean, I gratefully meet a healthy baby girl. And yet, I feel like I've failed somehow, like I wasn't strong enough to resist the painkillers, like I copped out and had a cesarean. So why are our deliberations around childbirth so fraught with judgment? From an outsider's view, it's insane. Hey, you brought a life into this world. Congratulations, right? Well, not exactly. And to help us sort through the complexities of bringing life into our world, we are joined by Maria Iorillo, who is a California licensed midwife as well as a certified professional midwife. And she has been in practice since 1986, 27 years. She has attended over 1,100 births and served on the board of directors of the California Association of Midwives and the Midwives Alliance of North America. She's given birth at home herself two times, and yesterday she also attended a birth. Welcome, Maria.
Just as a correction, I gave birth one time at home, and my partner gave birth to the other one at home.
Gotcha. You had two home births.
Yes, two home births. I got to catch my daughter.
Oh, very nice. Well, welcome. We're very glad to have you here and looking forward to hearing about yesterday's birth.
Absolutely.
And we're also joined by Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who is a practicing obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, which is recognized for its support of alternative birthing models. And in the coming year, he'll be a Fulbright research scholar in Hungary, where he intends to complete a qualitative analysis of how, under new government regulation, Hungarian women decide between home and hospital births. Welcome, Dr. Rubashkin.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you can hear me fine. I'm on a cell phone.
Yes, we can hear you. Thanks, Nick. We're also joined by Hilary Frank, who's a writer and a radio producer based in Montclair, New Jersey. She is the author and producer of The Longest Shortest Time blog and podcast about new parenthood. Hilary, whose daughter Sasha was born in February 2010, created The Longest Shortest Time as a, quote, bedside companion for new moms who want to hear that they are not alone. Hi, Hilary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. All right, so I'm wondering if, kind of briefly, each of you could talk about the evolution of birthing practices over the past 50 years and how you see the pros and cons of those changes. When my mom gave birth in the 60s, it was kind of like, give them the drugs, that don't really consult with them, leave them alone. And my mom talked about it with me last night and told me it was just awful. I mean, just a horrible experience. Whereas I feel like my experience, though much different than I expected it to be, everybody was kind. There was a lot of agency for myself and my husband. So, yeah, go ahead. We'll start with you, Maria.
Well, Holly, when you were telling your brother's birth story, I thought you were telling my story. That's almost exactly the same as me. I was born in 1963. I was the second baby. At that point in time, they were telling my mom had sort of 10 extra pounds from her first birth, which was only about a year prior. And so the doctors didn't want her to gain any weight, right?
Yeah, put the pregnant woman on a diet.
Yeah. No, really. So I was born actually 2 weeks early, and I was really small. I was 4 pounds, 11 ounces, something like that. I should have fallen out of my mother. But when she went to the hospital, they put her under something called twilight sleep, which puts the moms, unconscious, and therefore I needed to be pulled out with forceps.
Yeah.
That was common practice for that day. Thank goodness. We've come a long way from that. Going through the 60s with Ina Mae Gaskin, kind of late 60s, she was one of the pioneers, we say, of this new home birth, natural childbirth movement. And it literally started in the panhandle in San Francisco, where you had all these, you know, hippies, counterculture, you know, doing their own thing, back to the landers, living in buses on the panhandle. And so a number of them got pregnant. And at one point, the baby had to come.
The consequences of living on a bus.
Right. And the baby had to be born, but they were, you know, they weren't going to go to the hospital for, you know, to go meet the man to have their baby. So literally, Ina Mae Gaskin took out an obstetrical textbook and read the book while someone was laboring in front of her. Very crude. But, you know, most cases, baby comes out. And so birth after birth, they started to get to know more and more about birth and got very interested in natural childbirth and supporting birth out of the hospital. So she,
out of this kind of medicalized situation
right,
and seeing the mom as a problem in need of treatment.
Right. And this is at that point, you know, late 60s, early 70s was also the time when husbands were just then being allowed into the birth room. And one of these hippie stories is that, you know, the hippie husband handcuffed himself to his wife in order to be able to stay in there with her.
Because they would just kick the partner out.
Yeah, they would not let the husbands in. So gradually that shifted the thought to like, oh, okay, let's
Well,
let
and one of the
in.
Things that we know now, obviously, is that people who are in great pain and distress need support and consolation and just somebody to hold their hand.
Absolutely. And I would say birth not being as distress, but birth being a vulnerable and sort of raw experience and therefore needing support. And that's pretty much what all I'm about and what I feel like the midwifery model of care is all about is giving mothers support.
So let's bring Nick and Hillary into this conversation. So how do you see this evolution of birthing practices and choices? What do you see as the pros and cons? Let's start with you, Dr. Rubashkin.
Sorry, could you read? I was thinking of my own evolution or my family's evolution over the past few years.
Well, tell
years.
Us about you, that first.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, if it's not too off topic, but it I think parallels some of the things Maria was talking about. I'm from Maine in the Northeast, and my grandmother gave birth to 9 children, all under anesthesia. And when my mother had me, I was the second child, she disliked her first hospital delivery in the early 70s, and she found a remote island in Maine, which is where I'm at the Portland, Maine airport right now, leaving home with my mother sitting right next to me in the car. She found this island because she knew she could have a home delivery, which was standard practice there because of its geographic isolation. And so that was a wonderful experience for my mother, and also my grandmother was there, and that was I like to say that I was the first delivery that she was awake for, even after having 9 children. And she always spoke of it in that way, too. So there's been an enormous and thankful evolution in delivery and obstetric care in the last 50 years. And I think it's interesting to see how that's charted through our life stories.
Yeah, it is interesting. Hillary, did you want to weigh in on this question of sort of what are the pros and cons of how birthing practices have changed?
Well, I mean, I guess I have a different perspective, probably from midwives and OBs, having only given birth and not being on the medical side of it. But so just a little background. My mom gave birth to me, and interestingly, I was also about 4 pounds, 10 ounces, and my mom had barely gained any weight. But she was handcuffed to the gurney. And
why?
It was standard practice in case her arms were flailing about. I don't know. And she was also given an episiotomy. And so that was a big fear of mine going into this, was that I just could not stand the thought of having an episiotomy. And I really, was, I had a big struggle over whether to go with an OB or a midwife, and I started out with an OB just because that's who I saw for my regular checkups, and wound up switching because I liked the idea of natural childbirth, mainly because I did not like the idea of surgery of any kind, and I knew that, you know, tearing naturally was supposed to be, you're supposed to heal more quickly than if you're cut. And I felt like I was strong. I felt like I was going to be strong enough for this. You know, like I can like beat most women I know in arm wrestling, you know, and I can, and like when I was in middle school, I would always do the hang like longer than other girls. And I just felt like I am going to be one of those women who can just do this. And I wound up calling this midwife practice and asked them a lot of questions. And one of my questions was, how often do you do episiotomies? And they told me, in the last 20 to 30 years, I think I've only seen one. And so I said, all right, you know, I'm going with a midwife. And I read the Ina Mae Gaskin books and found them very inspiring and felt like, well, if I prepare enough, I am going to be able to do all the breathing and all the positioning and ask for the massages. And I was going to be in a special birthing room at the hospital that would have the right atmosphere and have the, you know, the hot tub and everything. And I just felt like it was going to be scary, but I was going to be ready. And what wound up happening was my daughter was facing what they call sunny side up. So her head was facing my belly instead of my back. And that makes it harder for them to come out. And I tried working with a chiropractor to turn her beforehand, and she just wouldn't turn. And she was in a position where she would have had to turn almost full 360 degrees to get out properly, because I guess babies only turn in one direction. So they just told me, if you're on your hands and knees while you're in labor, she is likely to turn. So I tried doing that. We got, you know, we get to the hospital, I'm having my contractions, and it's very, very painful, of course, which I did expect. And then I stalled out at like 4 or 5 centimeters, and I couldn't progress. And the pain was so excruciating. I'm not sure if it was because she was sunny side up, but I got to this point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I can't even accept a massage. I can't even be touched. I wound up getting an IV drip, and then that wasn't helping. And so they gave me what they called the eensiest, weensiest bit of Pitocin. And it sent me into these, like, 10-minute-long contractions, which, you know, when you're having contractions, the thing that gets you through them is the idea that they're going to end. They were just not ending, at which point, of course, I changed my mind, got an epidural, and I almost immediately opened all the way up to 10 centimeters. It just allowed me to relax enough. But I wound up pushing for 3.5 hours, which was longer than the hospital was supposed to allow. The midwife allowed me to go past 3 hours, I believe, to please me, because she knew in my birth plan that I wanted to try to have a vaginal birth. And because I couldn't push Sasha out in that amount of in the 3.5 hours, she decided to give me an episiotomy.
Hillary, I'm gonna just jump in here, yeah, and kind of let everybody know that we're talking about the evolution of the birth process, and we're asking people to call in and tell us about how they made their choices and how those choices impacted their experience and their health and the health of their babies. And it sounds like, in your case, you ended up with a healthy baby, but your birth did not go the way that you had imagined at all. So all of this planning may not end in the kind of result that we're expecting. parenting. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We're joined by Hilary Frank, who's the author, who's an author, radio producer, and the creator of the podcast The Longest Shortest Time. She was just telling us about her birth experience. We're also joined by Maria Iorillo, who's a home birth midwife with Wise Woman Home Birth Traditions, and Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who's an obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco. If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. How can we make it so that people can make informed, free choices about the childbirth process? And if you're a parent-to-be, how are you figuring out what's best for you and your family? If you have your own personal experience with childbirth, we'd love to hear about it briefly, especially if you gave birth decades ago. We'd like to hear the comparison between then and now, because that's one of the things that we're talking about is the evolution and the pros and cons of that evolution. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. That toll-free number again is 866-798-8255. And I'm getting some emails. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let me bring Nick and Maria back into this conversation. I'm wondering.
Are you there?
Great.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm wondering, you know, whether parents have good information to make informed decisions about this. I mean, are there misconceptions that we should discuss? Are there nuances about this that get lost when we have this debate over hospital versus home birth? Maria, you want to start us off and then we'll go to Nick?
Absolutely. Well, I certainly think that we need more education out there about choices in childbirth. And that's why I'm so appreciative, actually, of this forum right now. Really telling stories either on the radio, at the grocery store, in support, you know, mom support groups, wherever women get together to talk, there should be opportunities to learn about choices in childbirth. In the United States right now, home birth is only about 1% of all of the 4 million births a year that happen in the U.S. That's not very many. And I always kind of say, what do American women agree on 99% of the time, other than that? And it's nothing. We don't agree 99% of the time on anything. And so, therefore, I think there is a skewing of women towards hospital birth that is a little bit not fair.
And do you think it's fear-based?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. I think if we were able to take out the fear in childbirth that comes from, you know, kind of many sources, fear of pain, fear of, you know, complication, fear of some, you know, birth being this life-threatening act every single time someone has a baby,
yeah,
which is not true. Birth is not even an illness. Yes, it's very true that things can happen, but that's why you actually hire an experienced midwife to help you through the experience, and you don't necessarily do it alone. I'm not an advocate for unassisted childbirth. But, you know, if we had a neutral playing field, I think we'd have a very different percentage of people choosing home birth, birth center birth, and hospital birth. And it might even look almost like a third, a third, a third, something like that, if there wasn't, you know, this kind of marketing and fear around home birth.
And let's ask Nick, you're a doctor, you work at St. Luke's, which has actually done a lot to try and have a third option in there that merges these two choices. What do you think are some of the misconceptions that impede us from making informed decisions that are based on real facts and not just fear?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with and echo what Maria said, that, you know, there's, you know, in the culture, the images we have of pregnancy, you know, often center around fear, catastrophe, or crisis. And there's just in our minds and in our education and our language there, you know, isn't current, you know, it's changing, as we said, like with a lot of, you know, many of the authors that have been mentioned and also sources on the internet, kind of different ways of thinking about pregnancy are out there. And I really think we're kind of in a time of, you know, what's interesting about where we are right now is, you know, that things are kind of transitioning, where some of those voices like Ina May Gaskin, and they're also, you know, great, you know, I could list, you know, kind of the internet sources as well, where people have other authorities to go to, and there are pockets where of obstetrics where, you know, it's practiced, and I think, you know, thankfully in San Francisco we have lots of models of this, where obstetrics is practiced with more an effort at informed consent and being transparent and being accountable. So I think that, you know, we're having transitions where women can actually have more sources that they can trust. But sometimes when you're in this time of transition, there can be, you know, it can actually add, you know, have some more confusion about, you know, where, what actually information is the best out there. And I can sort of definitely appreciate that difficulty for birthing women and their supporters.
And Dr. Rubashkin, we have only about 2 minutes before we go to the break, but I'm wondering, what are some of the health implications for women and babies when they make some of these choices? For example, I got an epidural and I was on Pitocin and all these drugs. Like, how does that affect the baby?
Well, an epidural can prolong pushing, as Megan was saying, and it can increase your risk of having an episiotomy, a forceps, or vacuum-assisted delivery, and potentially a C-section if they're, you know, with the mother's efforts, she's not able to push the baby out with an epidural. So there, I think that having, you know, being informed and making your plan and understanding all your options going into labor is still incredibly valuable, even if, you know, as Megan kind of said, things veer off from your original plan, just so that you can not make those decisions in labor under admittedly more stressful conditions.
And let me ask. Go ahead.
And then also, there's great evidence that with increasing numbers of cesarean sections, there are, more complications of surgery, including increased risks of blood transfusion, injury to internal organs, abnormal placenta implantation, or risk of hysterectomy, especially, you know, when we get to the higher order C-sections of 3, 4, and 5 C-sections.
And what about for the baby?
Well, for the baby, a C-section can represent some transition, some difficulties in transition of respiration, which can sometimes mean more monitoring or oxygen support in the nursery. It can be those first few hours of bonding can be impeded by, the mother being in the recovery room and later initiation of breastfeeding. So it does especially impact introduce some different challenges in terms of bonding and breastfeeding.
Maria, we just have about 30 seconds before we go to the break, but what do you see as some of these impacts of choices on something like that, the bonding?
About the baby. Well, we midwives are now talking about something called the golden hour, and it's the special hour after the birth, and maybe we can even talk about it more after the break. But what the most important thing to do during the golden hour is to not interrupt what's going on between the mother and the baby at that time. And I think, you know, obviously I'm completely biased towards home birth, but in that setting, we don't have machines and extra people who can be interrupting that. So maybe we'll go back to
We will go back to the golden hour. You're listening to Your Call. You just heard from Maria Iorillo, who's a home birth midwife, and she's with Wise Woman Childbirth Traditions. We're also speaking with Hillary Frank, who's an author, radio producer, and Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who's an obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or if you prefer to write rather than call, it's feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can post a message at yourcallradio.org. Programming here on KALW is supported in part by An Evening with David Sedaris in celebration of his newest title, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. Sedaris will visit San Francisco's War Memorial Opera House Sunday, May 5th for an evening of all new readings and recollections. Tickets and information at davidsedarisontour.com.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll examine new proposals to regulate fracking in California. That's hydraulic fracturing. Friday is our weekly media roundtable where we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news, and we'll definitely be talking about Boston. Today, we're talking about how parents make decisions about pregnancy and childbirth and what it means to have a baby today, all of the choices involved for women who are carrying the baby and the partners who want to accompany them on the parenting journey. Cesarean births are on the rise, and simultaneously there's a growing movement toward working with midwives and giving birth at home. So how do we make it so that people can make informed, free choices about the childbirth process? And if you're a parent-to-be, how are you figuring out what's best for you and your baby? You can join our conversation when we get an open line at 866-798-TALK. Go ahead and write this number down, 866-798-TALK. Since we do have full lines, you can also send us an email, which I'll read a few of these in a minute, to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Our guests today are Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who's an obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, Hillary Frank, who's an author, radio producer, and creator of the podcast The Longest, Shortest Time, and Maria Iarillo, who's a home birth midwife with Wise Woman Childbirth Traditions. And Maria was talking about this golden hour. We've been talking about how the decisions we make affect the health and well-being of both the mom and the baby and the family. And you mentioned this golden hour, mm-hmm. and it feels like a lot of the interventions that happen at a hospital really do interrupt this.
Yeah. So, you know, the midwifery model of care, I think one of the most powerful things that it does is tries to bring back humanity to the birth process, just a gentleness. And what we were saying before about support. Oxytocin is a hormone that the body releases actually during the labor. This is what creates contractions. When the mother is breastfeeding, oxytocin produces the letdown of the milk supply. Oxytocin is said to help with the bonding to the baby. It's called the love hormone. It's even said that when you're petting a dog or cat or looking at baby animal pictures, your body releases oxytocin. It's kind of responsible for that warm and fuzzy feeling that you get. Research has shown that the highest levels of oxytocin in a woman's blood are actually in that hour after the birth. It's fascinating because you'd think it'd be during this moment of contractions and pain and intensity, but actually the highest level of oxytocin is immediately after. And what we are theorizing is that it's about the bonding. This is the moment that the mother lays eyes upon this baby and falls in love with this baby, particularly when it's left to its natural experience. The woman, honestly, is so relieved that this labor is over. She's out of pain.
Tell me about
this
it.
This baby is alive and in her arms. That flood of hormones allows her to gaze upon her baby, no matter whether there is blood and gook and whatever on the baby, and immediately bond. That's important for survival, isn't it? Because this mother is the you know, responsible for this child's, you know, survival in the world. So it's all kind of meant to happen. And to bring back this sense of gentleness and humanity into the birth experience, which also, I believe, creates a sense of empowerment for women, that we want to protect that golden hour so that way the body is allowing this bonding to unfold.
And you think that this actually has long-term effects on the mother-child relationship?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who talk about that babies actually remember, you know, their birth experience. And that as you go forward, that it can affect your relationship with your mother, with trust relationships out in the world. You know, this is getting kind of a little bit heady, but really we believe that a really beautiful, solid beginning has got to impact the rest of somebody's life.
And let's go to our callers because we have a lot of people on the line that want to join our conversation. Let's start with Anya in Santa Cruz. Hi, welcome to Your Call. Anya, are you there? Do we have gremlins on the line again, folks? Anya in Santa Cruz? Okay, let's try Tanya in San Francisco. Hi, Tanya.
Hey, Holly.
Hi, nice to hear from you.
I hope you're doing well. We know each other, and I got really excited about this show because Maria was my midwife. I still actually consider her my midwife, even though I've already had my baby. And
I'm always your midwife, Tanya.
Always be my midwife. And Dr. Baskin is the from the same doctor's group that I was with at St. Luke's. And I just wanted to say that although I planned a home birth, I did have a C-section. Nora was breech, and I could have done a vaginal birth with her, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to have the C-section because I wanted it to be the safest first birth for her. At least that was my feeling. And while it was totally not my birth plan, it was actually a really beautiful birth. And, you know, sometimes the two things I want to say about that is, for one of the reasons why it was such a great birth was because Maria was there. She was a huge advocate and support for me and my husband and my family, and made it such that the C-section could be actually a very beautiful thing rather than a challenging, scary thing. And the other thing is that, you know, sometimes, you know, things may not go exactly as you plan, but you can embrace the fact that they might not go as you plan, and that, you know, life is full of surprise, and that's okay.
And that's basically what the parenting gig is going to be, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Well, can I ask you, go ahead.
I just want to say one thing is that when we were in the hospital, one of the things that we really wanted, and that I know about this golden hour, is to hold Nora right after she came out. I mean, we didn't know she was a Nora. We weren't sure, but to hold, she turned out to be Nora, to hold Nora right when she came out. And we did have to advocate for that. And Maria was completely key and vital to doing that. And because of that, Nora came out, and we had her on us the whole time, right after she came out, the whole time.
Tanya, I just showed Holly the picture of you and Nora in that, you know, first moment. And I actually just showed that to another mom this morning who was going in for a C-section. And just to let moms know that, you know, when we plan a home birth, it doesn't mean you're going to have this beautiful, idyllic water birth, you know, like you planned. But you can still bring the intention. And I know that you advocated for yourself really well. And we fought hard for you to have that golden hour, you know, with the least interruption possible. So this is what I love about St. Luke's. That baby was born in St. Luke's, and they're really opening up some space to allow that to happen. And I really hope that the other hospitals will begin to work in that direction also.
Well, and what I think is interesting, yes, hearing about this, I'll bring in just a second, Dr. Rubashkin. It's so interesting, Tanya, you're bringing our whole panel together here around your personal experience. But what's interesting is you started out with a home birth and ended up in the hospital. And I think that a lot of people think if you have complications at a home birth, that's going to end in tragedy, and that you have these plans so that you can, you know, if there are complications, you can end up in the hospital. So go ahead, Nick.
Yes, I think it's a great story because I think it really demonstrates kind of where, you know, I personally, you know, and philosophically, I think our, you know, our St. Luke's practice would like the field to go in, is this more kind of a productive relationship between all of, you know, the different, you know, stakeholders and people involved in birth, in the way that Tanya described, like with her home birth midwife and Tanya and her family. And really it becomes an honor for us to kind of take people along that journey through various complications and surgery, and really try to have, you know, a productive communication, or even a productive tension, with to try and incorporate, you know, what are the most important elements and ones that we can still incorporate into surgical birth when it's necessary. So I think it's a beautiful story.
And
can I add something?
Sure.
So
this,
Maria,
is Hillary, right?
Yes, this is Hillary. Maria, I have a question for you, because so I totally respect what midwives do and love all the rhetoric behind it, but I also feel like it sort of sets us up, those of us who can't achieve a natural childbirth, I feel like it sets us up to feel like we failed if we can't achieve it. And I wonder, like, is there a way to kind of let people know, like, how can we make mothers feel like it's okay no matter what happens?
Yeah. I think that's a really great, because both you and I, Hillary, had those kinds of experience, mm-hmm, of we just failed. We did this wrong.
Yeah. You know, it's been about 45 years since Ina Mae Gaskin did her, you know, births in the bus sort of experience. And so home birth midwifery in particular has evolved over those decades. And I do. We have definitely heard, unfortunately, you know, this sort of elitism of the home birth community, you know, that you have to have the candlelight and the water birth and, you know, the beautiful baby with the
bear skin rug, synthetic.
Right. And of course, that's not going to happen for probably the majority of people. It's not going to happen like that. But my only thing is that I think that the home birth community had to fight so hard to establish our position in the world and to, you know, kind of passionately for me to fight for my clients, that it engendered this sort of rigid sort of philosophy around it. Now, I feel like we can ease up now. I'm feeling like, especially with Ricky Lake's movie, it's gotten a little bit more popular. I mean, we're still at 1%. So
That's the business of being born, and we'll put a link to it at yourcallradio.org.
Right. I think that we've been able to ease up a little bit, and I personally tell my clients from the get-go, a good birth is not about it being born at home, because I can't guarantee you that that's going to happen for you. What I believe over all this period of time, you know, 27 years of doing births, what I've come down to, a good birth for me and for my client ultimately means that she's treated with kindness, that she's treated with respect, that she's honored for the work that she's doing while that is happening, and that women are treated as if they are smart. You know why? Because they are. They are smart. And with all of those things in place, women can have a good, empowering birth experience. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, Tanya's was in the OR or somebody, you know, was at home. They can, you know, ultimately what I want is a good experience for my women.
That's Maria Iarillo, and she is a home birth midwife with Wise Woman Childbirth Traditions. We're also joined by Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who's an obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, and Hillary Frank, who's an author, radio producer, and creator of the podcast The Longest Shortest Time. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We have an email from Judith in Berkeley who says, in the early 1960s, the Biernick twins, OBGYNs, in Berkeley encouraged natural childbirth. Herrick Hospital allowed fathers in the delivery room. Woohoo! I know, because they delivered my son in April 1962 with daddy in attendance. They arranged Lamaze classes for their patients. So just to let you know that some of these things were going on in Berkeley in the 60s. Uh-huh. Let's go to Sylvia. Sylvia in Mountain View. Hi, Sylvia.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I have had two births, and I was in Pennsylvania. And I guess my experience it reflects what you were just discussing in terms of choice and respect, because I wanted the natural birth. The first one, I started in a birthing center. That was my way of not being in a hospital but not being at home, because my husband wouldn't support that. And I ended up in a hospital but having a wonderful birth. I even had an epidural, but it was so well done that I could feel the contractions and I could even squat and I could still move. So it's not as bad as it might seem, because after 20 hours of trying to get past 4 centimeters, I did eventually give up. But my point was, with the birthing center, I didn't feel as much respect from the people that were working there as I did in my second birth, which was then in a hospital with a doctor who supported me fully in my quest for a natural birth, which then did happen. I had no drugs whatsoever and everything went smoothly. So the issue is respect and choice, no matter where you start or finish your birth. And I thought that was really important distinction, and the whole guilt thing about being in hospital, not hospital, and the whole, sometimes I think the birthing community and the birth centers, they paint a very negative picture of doctors. They don't have time, they rush around. Well, I found the opposite. I found my doctor was sitting in the hospital knitting caps for newborn babies and being very patient.
Nick, do you do that? Are you knitting yet?
Yeah, she knitted hats for her children.
Can you?
Let's hear from Nick, Sylvia.
It sounds like a great experience, and I'm really glad that the caller was able to find a physician where she felt supported. I think you will see that there's just incredible variation even within, you know, San Francisco and across the country in terms of what kinds of choices will be supported in childbirth. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of information that, you know, you kind of stated before, that there are many areas of the country where C-section rates are far above the national average, which is currently in the low 30s. And if you've had a C-section, it can be difficult to obtain vaginal birth after cesarean section. It can be very challenging also to find providers who offer breech singleton vaginal deliveries. And these are, you know, many options that should be available. So it kind of brings into question for, you know, from the provider's perspective, what does informed choice mean when the full range of choices aren't accessible in all areas?
And do you feel, Nick, like the medical community is beginning to offer a wider range of choices to, you know, when they talk with women about what they're going to decide to do?
I think it's I think it's really variable. So that's why it's you know, so important for people to do their homework on their obstetric and midwifery practices. But particularly, you know, with the case of sort of a breech, you know, vaginal delivery, that really disappeared as an option, you know, in the late 90s, 2000s in, you know, Europe and America. And there are some people who are trying to revive that as an option. And it's an uphill climb after an option disappears, because particularly for breech vaginal delivery, it's a, you know, rebuilding of skills and of education and of really, you know, knowledge that has been lost. So there are people who are working on these things, but it's happening. It's just happening, I would say. It's kind of being resurrected.
And I'm
would you agree, Maria?
Yeah. But what I would also say is, okay, how do women have the birth of their dreams, really? First of all, what I think women need to do is to look at their values, look at their lifestyle. What kind of choices are they making in their own lifestyle as far as how do they use Western medicine? Do they use alternatives? You know, what kind of, you know, how much do they subscribe to a, quote, natural, holistic lifestyle? But then what they need to really do is find both a practitioner and an environment that will support the birth that they're choosing. And this is what I think is reflective of what the callers were talking about. So first of all, you need to find a practitioner who's going to support the kind of birth that you're looking for, particularly if you're looking for a natural childbirth. You need a doctor or a midwife who's going to actively support that, not just give you lip service and say, oh, yeah, you can do that in room number 5. You need to find someone who's going to actively support you to have a natural childbirth, because guess what? It's hard. It's actually challenging to have a natural
childbirth. It's also expensive.
Well, I mean, you can have a natural childbirth in the hospital, too. You totally can. You know, and insurance does cover midwifery services as well as hospital. But you also need an environment. So you need a hospital that is going to be supportive of that, too. And this is where, you know, again, St. Luke's has been really helpful with that. If you wanted to have a natural childbirth, I wouldn't choose CPMC on California Street, because it's not really, that's not their style. But home birth, it completely allows the natural childbirth experience, because guess what? We don't even have any drugs there. And I just want to give one shout out to a brand new birth center that's opening in Berkeley called the Pacifica Family Maternity Center, which will be a lovely place to have a birth center. We no longer have a birth center in San Francisco.
But it's coming, the Pacifica
Family Maternity Center is in Berkeley.
In Berkeley. Okay. We'll put a link to that at yourcallradio.org along with other resources related to this discussion. I want to get to more calls because we have a lot of people on the line. We've got an email from Irene saying, I'm Italian with my husband. We're expecting our first child in San Francisco. I was shocked at the healthcare system, CPMC. We were not offered the care of a midwife for my normal pregnancy. In Italy, it's normal to have midwives follow and support a normal pregnancy, a pregnancy without complications, I believe. So we looked for alternatives. We were happy that we found the Home Birth Collective, and we're ready to have a home birth. We're excited, feel supportive. I feel my husband will be completely present and participate. We also had a call from Anya in Santa Cruz who wanted to say she had a home birth and is about to have another, but she's having problems with health insurance related to home birth. So maybe that's something you can all address. Another email from Jennifer, as both a mother and advanced practice perinatal nurse, I feel like an honest and open discussion is necessary for parents to make these decisions. One issue that I think is often overlooked is that of prevention over intervention. Safely birthing at home with a lay or certified nurse midwife as opposed to a medicalized setting with a nurse midwife or obstetrician. The perspective I would like to contribute to the discussion today is that women can and do have beautiful birth experiences in these settings under a variety of circumstances. And Molly writes, I'm very excited for your broadcast today. I finished my thesis at Berkeley last year on the same topic, and I wanted to share it with you. I explored the history of birth in the U.S., the effects it had on the practices and cultural conceptions of pregnancy and birth, and how it compares to other models, namely Sweden. Underlying this is a discussion of how and why midwives were pushed out early on and the consequences of that today. And I want to just quote from Ina May Gaskin, who said, when birth went into hospitals, midwives did not go with it. Do you want to just briefly comment on that and kind of the effect that that had on the system without having,
well,
you know,
largely,
centuries of this tradition?
Yeah, well, largely midwives were pushed out. I think it was even before then that with Dr. Chamberlain, I believe, who invented the forceps, he kind of magically would come in, you know, to a more difficult birth and then, you know, kind of take a baby out, not necessarily, you know, in good condition. But that was the beginning of the sort of the male takeover of birth. And that happened. And so by the time we were into the 1940s, almost all American births were in the hospital. And that's when the kind of changeover.
And here's another email. Your guests have not mentioned that only 1% of births are home births, in large part because most people don't have insurance and midwives are expensive. I want to get to more calls, so we don't have time to go into this right now. We'll put some information at yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Cindy in Santa Cruz. Hi, Cindy.
Hi there.
Can you try and be brief because we're running out of time?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I've had 3 births. 2 of them were home births. One was an emergency C-section prior to labor starting. And I guess the main thing I wanted to speak to was the call that you received previously where a woman had a posterior, she called it a sunny side up baby, and ended up, it sounds like, in a very difficult, long, protracted labor. And then I don't know what the ending to that was, but I had a very similar experience with my first home birth. It was a 30-hour labor. I never was really able to get things off the ground in terms of my dilation. And eventually, after about 26 hours, my midwife manually dilated me. So it was very painful and very intense and pretty traumatic. On my third birth, I very much wanted to have a home birth after having a C-section in my prior birth. And I ended up seeking out information about what to do if I found myself in that situation again where my birth wasn't progressing. And I discovered that most C-sections are actually a result of labors not progressing, dilation not continuing. Is that correct? Is that
I would agree.
Okay.
I would say.
So, yeah, go ahead. Jump in, Nick, because we're running out of time here, Cindy.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say probably about half of first-time C-sections are done for labor, you know, issues with labor, and probably about another half are done for fetal monitoring.
Thank you. Go ahead very briefly, please, Cindy.
Well, it's just that on my third labor that the very same thing happened. But this time I had a different midwife who actually had a method of turning a baby around. And she did that method, and my baby was out within an hour and a half, and it turned into about an 8-hour labor total. So I just wanted to put out there that even in the home birth movement, there are things that maybe aren't used by midwives that could be.
Great. That's a wonderful point for us to have some final thoughts from our panel here. So we really only have 45 seconds for each of you to give us final thoughts. And I'm hoping somebody can address the cost question here, the fact that insurance is so hard for people to get alternatives. Let's start with Nick.
Why don't I address kind of this issue of, knowledge transfer between the home the hospital or midwives and obstetricians. Yeah, I think that we absolutely need to multiply the number of, you know, skills that obstetricians have, you know, and that there's much that we can benefit from, you know, hearing stories like this about how to support women with difficult labors, so that we have as many tools that we can offer so that, you know, that we really can attest to the, you know, to doing C-sections for, you know, when we've used all of these tools that should be at our disposal. I'll leave Maria to answer the insurance and access question.
So I will just say that PPOs do pay partial for a home birth. They usually don't pay the whole amount. The more difficult thing that we have right now is that Medi-Cal doesn't pay for home births. People can call me, and I'm happy to have a conversation with them more about the insurance and cost issues. But what I would say to you, Holly, is that pregnancy and birth is a hot topic. And so when you are ready to have a regular show about this, just call me and I'll be here once a week.
Excellent. Great. All right. Are you down for that, Hillary? Do you want to give us some final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up with the idea of, I wanted to just like put a call out to the natural birth community to try to, you know, spread the word about what Maria was saying to let people know that it's okay if you can't have your home birth at home and you have to go with other methods.
And it sounds like Maria is saying that that kind of polarization is beginning to melt, softening, so that it isn't an either-or question, and so that maybe we can be a little less judgmental about ourselves and our decisions.
Yeah, you know, I used to be considered a criminal here in California when I first started because midwifery was illegal. But now that, you know, I'm a legal, you know, have my rightful position in this, so I don't have to be on the defensive as much either.
Excellent. And we will put a link to all of that information, including how you can contact Maria at yourcallradio.org. I thank my guests, Hillary Frank. She is the creator of the podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. Dr. Nick Rubashkin, who's an obstetrician at St. Luke's Hospital in San Francisco, and Maria Iarillo, who's a home birth midwife with Wise Woman Home Birth Traditions. Did I say it wrong again?
Wise Woman Childbirth
Traditions. Childbirth Traditions. Wise Woman Childbirth Traditions. All of that information is at Your Call Radio. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. What's happening with fracking in California? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about California's laws around hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking. Several pieces of legislation are on the table that would require oil and gas companies to disclose the cocktail of chemicals used in the process. Will new transparency laws be enough to protect California's air and water from contamination? Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listener of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.